Okay, we're back on tape. How long is the course in Brazil for the first degree, the bachelor's degree?
4 years.
4 years. So it's the same as here, except nowadays people take 5 or 6 years to do it, but generally it's 4 years. Okay. And then I noticed on your resume that you went and did a master's after that, and that took another 4 years.
Yeah. That's a common practice there, mm-hmm. if you, at least for this course that was geared towards mm-hmm. research, that you do a master's afterwards if you want to be on research. And by that time, by the end, well, let me back up a little bit. The last year is an internship year.
Oh. Okay.
So you work in the lab. And I went to a lab that was in biochemistry that, you know, even though it had its problems, was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So after this year there, I was more into research, and I decided to continue. So I did my master's right there in the same lab.
Okay, that was that Helena Nader's lab?
Yeah, it's actually the big professor there was called Dietrich, and Helena Nader was his former postdoc that became his wife eventually.
Oh, okay.
So the group had a little bit of that dynamics of
mm-hmm.
having a big boss and the wife of the big boss in charge.
Mm-hmm.
That makes it a little weird sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But still, they were publishing in international journals. That was motivating.
Mm-hmm. When did you realize you were interested in research?
Well, I always enjoyed life science. Mm-hmm. Now, doing research or doing something else, I'm not sure it came to me as something I realized or as just a consequence of my career.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very curious, and I always, mm-hmm. you know, I have a tendency, I guess, to do research naturally.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't remember of a defining moment that I thought, well, this is really what I want to do. It was just a progression of events, basically.
Mm-hmm. But you did make a decision because you went into the master's program.
Yeah, I guess I did, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Some people don't. They just go to graduate school because they can't think of anything else to do.
Well, it's... Maybe I have to try to remember a little harder, but sometimes I have the feeling that I was going through the movements.
Uh-huh.
Even though at that point it's hard to believe that I did that without having more of a clear mind. I was always ambitious. And, mm-hmm. you know, by the time I finished this internship, I really want to be publishing papers, doing good research, mm-hmm. because if that's my area, I want to do as good as I could. So, for example, the bachelor's degree,
mm-hmm.
I took 3 months off and I came to the United States for vacation. I came alone. I came with one of the passes that you can buy if you're abroad, that you can fly anywhere you want for 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
So I flew everywhere. One of my goals was to improve my English. And the water is just to experience the United States. But one of the places I went was Saskatoon in Canada, because there was a professor there that has gone to sabbatical where mm-hmm. I was in Brazil,
mm-hmm.
and he was the only contact I had. And I wanted to see if I could work with him for a year or so. So I could fly to Minot in North Dakota. That was winter.
One of the garden spots of the
right.
world.
And then I hitchhiked to Saskatoon in the winter.
Oh my.
A lot of people tell me that it's a suicide, but I guess I was not thinking. And I was lucky enough that it was not that cold. But so when I got there, this professor was surprised because I didn't tell him I was going to go. But he was also impressed that, you know, I had that kind of drive. And he said, you know, he was changing his lab. He was doing something. He said that was not a good idea for me to go there, but I should definitely check other places because it looked like I had a drive and, you know, I should be doing that. So then I used, in the same trip, I went to labs of friends and actually gave talks about the work that I was doing. My supervisors were actually pissed because I didn't tell them that I was doing that. So I was a little bit naive in a sense, mm-hmm. but I had a lot of drive to, mm-hmm. to, you know, to do these things during my vacations that mm-hmm. I really didn't have to. So, you know, at that point, I was already going full steam towards my career, I think, mm-hmm. even though maybe I was, it just came mm-hmm. naturally with that 1 year of experience. Mm-hmm.
So did you end up getting a job in the States?
Well, I ended up in San Francisco where I drove a bike for a month.
Oh, okay.
And then I went back to Brazil. I did insist on it because once I went back, I start my master's degree there. And after, I think, 2 years and a half or 3 years, my supervisor sent me to Buenos Aires mm-hmm. for this very nice course that's in a world-famous place called Fundación Campomar. That's where Luis Leloir was. There was a fellow that won the Nobel Prize for discovering how glycogen was synthesized. Mm-hmm. So he was very famous in Argentina, of course. Mm-hmm. And he created this whole institute with lots of good people. And they have this course that was followed. And after you ended the course, you would stay working with someone there. Mm-hmm. And that was also maybe a defining moment for me because I was lucky enough to work with this guy called Parodi, Armando Parodi. That he's really a role model for me nowadays. I stayed 11 additional months with him there.
Oh, okay.
And
so it says on your resume you were there for 3 months. No, I'm sorry. 7 months. 8 months.
Yeah, it was 11 total. It was a 4 month, so maybe I misrolled there. It was a 4 month course, mm-hmm. and after that it was a lab train.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
Overall I stayed 11 months. And I just went back to Brazil because my supervisors were really pissed because I was supposed to stay just, I think, 7 months. And I was stretching because I want to finish a piece of work. And there was a whole life experience also, if I want to, I can talk about that. I don't know if it's, at this point, it's relevant for me to talk about what was happening at my personal level.
Sure.
Why not?
If you want to.
So when I went there, mm-hmm. I went with a colleague of mine, a girl that was also a student in the same group I was in Brazil. We were already having an affair, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so it was a great trip. We drove to Buenos Aires through uh-huh. the coast. And I had my car there, and we rented an apartment. It was nice. The only problem is that she had a boyfriend in São Paulo. And after a while, for one reason or another, she froze. And, you know, she came back before I did, and she went back to her boyfriend. So at that point, I also became involved with someone that was working in Parodi's lab. I'm being candid now because she was married like 2 months before that, but her husband lived in another city, and we were together all the time. So it was not 100% platonic, but was close to it. We really did not have much of intimate contact mm-hmm. at that time. But it was a very strong thing. So all this contributed for me to stay longer and longer. Mm-hmm. And also the work was enjoying a lot because mm-hmm. of the style of the lab, mm-hmm. the way it was run. And, you know, Parodi would work in the lab all the time. And and that was something that impressed me, mm-hmm. that I cannot do here.
We're going to get to that.
Yeah. So I stay as long as I could.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, he finished the work after I went back to Brazil. And after a while, I think, he finished the work and he published a paper and put me as a first author. And that was very important for my mm-hmm. for my start, as we'll sure. discuss later.
Sure.
So, you know, that was a great experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I really didn't have to go to the United States at that point. So I was happy with that. But when I went back, I had to finish my master's.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that in another few months.
Mm-hmm. Let me back up for just a second. What was it, aside from the fact that he worked in the lab, what was it that made that lab experience so
right.
good? And this is one of the important things,
yes,
I think, too.
Yes. I mean, he was very inspirational for me. But let me see if I can tell you why, because I'm not even sure I know. First thing is that he was liked by the people in the lab, and he was respected
mm-hmm.
by everybody.
Mm-hmm.
He would publish very good papers, very good journals, you know, more than the average people there in that very good institution. I think his productivity was one thing that impressed me, and how efficient he was. He was, you know, not only doing experiments, but he had a typewriter. Old
mm-hmm.
typewriter in those
mm-hmm.
days. He was still using that. He was typing all the time,
mm-hmm.
or working on the bench. So it's just his productivity made a big impression.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, he had a good sense of humor. He was warm. He was smart. He was sharp.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a combination of all that. And, you know, as we'll probably discuss later on, there are other people with similar features that also became a role model for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I know, from looking at your resume, all of this put together took 4 years to get the master's. Now, here you could almost have a PhD in that time. So what, I mean, you said this is the normal way to do it.
Yeah, it's different. There... the master's and the PhD, they almost take the same time. It's like, usually a master's will take 3 years
okay.
there, and a PhD will take 3 to 4 years there.
Okay.
And the master's there is, if you're in a basic department, it's not really a review or a course study. It's really work in the lab.
Okay.
So it's very similar to a PhD. At the PhD level, you should be more prepared, so things should move faster.
So there's no coursework. It's strictly
there is,
lab.
There is.
Oh, there is.
There is.
Okay.
You know, you need 60 credits for a master's, and then you need 90 for a PhD. But those 60 count,
yeah,
so you just need
yeah,
30 more.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But you still need your thesis with lab work if you are in a basic department.
Right.
So it's kind of, if I have to compare, the PhD here is split in two
mm-hmm.
over there.
Okay.
But that... it's good in a sense, because if you want to make a change, you can. Even though I would say that the majority of people just go from master's to PhD in the same lab.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But
that's
I
kind of interesting, because at the undergraduate level, you can't make a change very easily. You know, you
right.
enroll in medical school at
right.
18 or in whatever, but you can make a change after the master's.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So... you made a big change. You came to the States.
Yeah,
what,
not only
what
that, but I changed the topic of study also
mm-hmm.
completely. And
well,
let's
talk about that.
Yeah, that's a funny story, because it's completely circumstantial.
Okay.
So every weekend I would go to the beach.
Mm-hmm.
It's this place called Maresias that's 2.5 hours from São Paulo. Used to be a very quiet place because there was no paved road. But, you know, in the last 10 years, it became really crowded because
mm-hmm.
they paved the road and all that. But was a nice surfing place, nice waves, and, you know, interesting people. So I would be there every weekend, basically. And one of these weekends, I met one friend of mine. It was not really a friend, it was an acquaintance. It's a very strange person. Should I give his name?
It's up to you.
Yeah, why not?
Sure.
Well, maybe I should. So I can describe him better.
Okay.
So he's an MD, and he has training in neuromuscular diseases. Mm-hmm. He got his MD in Brazil, but he had traveled to France and other places to get more specialized in neuromuscular disease, particularly pathology of neuromuscular disease. He's quite a character because he was, you know, very much into drugs and alcohol and, you know, to extremes. Mm-hmm. So it was not unusual to wake up, go to the beach, and see him there with his socks on, you know, the face, the sand and things like that. He has a very powerful father that's in a medical school in São Paulo. And I'm sure he put a lot of pressure on him in different ways, and that probably shaped the way he is. Mm-hmm. But in any case, so I was there, he was there, and he just out of the blue said, you know, do you know how to measure carnitine? That's a substance that's in the muscle.
Measure what?
Carnitine. It's a substance that's in the muscle that helps to transport fatty acids. I said, no, but I could, right, if I get a protocol or something like that. I said, well, why don't we do this? Why don't you go learn this in New York? That I know this guy that's not, it's the best guy in the world on this and that, and you can learn and come back and do it, because I need for my studies. I said, well, all right, let's talk about it. So, you know, this guy that he was talking about is this Salvatore Di Mauro. That's he's a very well-known MD researcher in New York at Columbia. He's originally from Italy, but has been in the U.S. for 30 years. You know, he's at the top of the neuromuscular disorders field, particularly mitochondrial genetics. And so I don't remember the details, but I contacted him and said, well, you know, I know this friend of mine contacted him first. He said, yeah, sure, if you can come up with the funds. And, you know, I was a very go-get-it kind of person. So I said, well, I'll find some fellowship. The fact that I had a master's was good because PhD fellowships were relatively easy to get. So I applied for a PhD fellowship. But now I was really jumping the gun there big time because I was not accepted to any kind of PhD program. The guy just accepted me to go there and do some work. Mm-hmm. And I really, you know, went over my head there because I got a letter from his lab saying that he accepted me to go there, but the letter didn't really specify what kind of work I'll be doing. So I used the letter to apply for my PhD fellowship. Now, I was determined to do a PhD. But I was not accepted to one, and I really had no idea what it would take for me to be accepted. Mm-hmm. But anyways, I applied, and I got the fellowship. And so this was in March of 87, when all this was happening, and that's at the same time that I met Julia, my present wife. So the fellowship was for start in October, September, mm-hmm. October of the same year. So I decided to go. And originally for 1 or 2 years. I was also fooling myself that I thought I could get a PhD in 1 to 2 years. I really had no idea of what a PhD here is. Mm-hmm. But anyways, I was always taking quite a lot of risks, I think. Maybe I'm a little calmer now, but at that age, I was just going to go for it and see what happened. I didn't even think that I could get in trouble with the Brazilian government because of the fellowship I had.
Did you get in trouble?
No.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Not yet. Okay.
Well, so what happens then? So I decide to go. Mm-hmm. First, personal level, I had Julia that I had met a few months ago. I was not sure what to do with her, but, you know, I asked her to come with me. Mm-hmm. She was working in a magazine, producing pictures and things like that, and she was a little tired of the kind of job, and she said, well, we'll go, you know, with a round-trip ticket. So I went, and I started working with the Mauro, and there the group is interesting because it's actually four groups, four PIs that interact very closely, mm-hmm. and they do a number of things, you know, from biochemistry to genetics to mm-hmm. morphology. So it was a good place to learn because I could, you know, go everywhere. Mm-hmm. They have open doors. And if you're not shy and it's driven, you can really learn a lot.
But were you, you're not in the PhD program
no,
at this point?
No, I was
point.
Not in the
okay.
PhD.
So you've got money to be a PhD student and no
I had a fellowship
school.
For
okay.
PhD, right.
Okay.
So, yeah, the first order of business for me was I have to get into a PhD program.
Yeah.
So what I did after, you know, a couple of months to get acquainted with the system, not really with the system, with the labs, there was a fellow called Armand Miranda, and he was one of these four groups. Mm-hmm. He was the PI of one of these four groups. And he had a primary appointment in pathology. Mm-hmm. And there was a PhD program in pathobiology, Columbia University. So I was doing some work with him and said, well, let's try to get into the program there since I'm already doing the work and things were starting to work. So I went to interview with some people in pathology and it was a disaster because, you know, I just said all the wrong things, mm-hmm. like that I want to do it in 2 years. I don't know. It was just a disaster. One thing I had in my favor is that I didn't need a stipend because I already had one.
Yeah, they like it when you have your own money.
Right. But I guess they thought I was so out of it, you know, trying to do it in 2 years that they didn't accept. But that was actually good because my second trial was with Eric Schoen. That was in genetics. That was a better program mm-hmm. overall. And also Eric, even though I like Armand and everything, Eric's better supervisor. He's much more into the science than Armand was. So my second interview was much better. I had several things in my favor. The first one is that paper from Parodi that was already published, and I was first author. You know, not many applicants have that. Mm-hmm. It's published in biochemistry. That's a good journey. The work was going pretty well at Columbia. And I also had a paper that we were working on that I think was already accepted for the New England Journal of Medicine. And thirdly, I had my own money. So they really didn't see any reason not to accept that. And so I was officially accepted, and I started working. And I had to take the courses. I could place out one or two courses by doing a test, like biochemistry that I was already trained and things. So it went pretty smoothly then because the work was already on a roll when mm-hmm. I got in. And I was lucky. We can talk in a little bit more details about the, you know, the this part related to the work because, you know, was the beginning of a field, really. And I was very lucky to be in the right time in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
And that started in, I guess towards the end of 87 or 88.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the beginning of 88. There were a couple of papers published by different groups, one in England, another one at Emory University, showing mutations in the mitochondrial DNA associated with human diseases. So that up to that point, that was considered something that was not possible, because the mitochondrial DNA codes for very crucial things that, you know, the enzymes of the respiratory chain that you need to produce energy. So people thought that you cannot have a big mutation. But these papers describe that you could, because you can have a mixture of wild-type normal mitochondrial DNA and mutated mitochondrial DNA. So you have a population genetics. So that really started a whole new field. And there, that group at Columbia, they have a huge number of patients in the freezer with these clinical phenotypes of mitochondrial diseases, but nothing was known about the genetics.
You know, because this may be listened to by will undoubtedly be listened to by non-scientists, what do you mean when you say they had patients in the freezer?
Right, they had pieces of patients. No, they had
like
mainly muscle biopsies.
Muscle biopsies.
Also
okay.
Autopsies sometimes, okay. And sometimes skin cultures.
Okay.
But mainly muscle biopsies, because that was a muscle lab.
Okay.
So it was relatively easy to take a piece of this muscle, grind it, extract the DNA, and test for these new mutations, or even new mutations that were not even mm-hmm. described. So it was a very productive time, because we found lots of different mutations, mm-hmm. new mutations, and we could come up with new techniques to study those diseases, the muscle. So, you know, publication-wise, was a very good period.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of 5-6 years, I could just take a bunch of papers, put together, write an introduction and a conclusion, and that was my thesis. So it's really, it didn't take me much work to do the thesis,
mm-hmm.
because you know, the work was going so well.
That's great. Well, I noticed that you got another master's degree from Columbia.
Yeah, but that's technicality.
That's a step on the way.
Yeah, Columbia, I think they get money from the state if they give you a degree.
Oh.
So in your way to get a PhD, they give you a master's and a master's in philosophy. Master's in arts and a master's in philosophy.
Oh, okay.
I guess if I quit at that point, I would have those degrees.
Uh-huh.
But it was not something extra.
I see. Just part of the deal. Okay, so now compared to Parati's lab, how was this lab that you were in? In what ways was it similar and different?
The characters were quite different. As I said, there were four PIs.
Mm-hmm.
Salvatore Di Mauro is like the father figure there that keeps everybody together.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a very nice guy, loved by everybody. His lab is not the most organized, because he has so many commitments outside the lab
mm-hmm.
that he has to rely on, you know, people in the lab to get things going. And then there is Eric Schoen, that's the one that does the most basic science maybe there. He does genetics, molecular genetics. He's quite a character also. His strong points are his enthusiasm for science. He's always beaming when he talks about science.
Mm-hmm.
His weaknesses are, I don't know, he has maybe too many crazy ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And if sometimes people don't know him very well and might think that he's a bit obnoxious,
mm-hmm.
that's absolutely not the case. Mm-hmm. If you get to know him,
mm-hmm.
you know, sometimes he talks a little bit too enthusiastically mm-hmm. about things
mm-hmm.
and without stopping to think too much. But he's an extremely generous person, and he teaches very well. So I learned
mm-hmm.
a lot from him.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was Armand Miranda. That was a completely different character, a little bit more shy. He would get upset much more often than most people.
Mm-hmm.
With all kinds of things, and sometimes he'll go into a rampage of the world is against him.
Mm-hmm.
Still a very nice guy, very bright, but all those problems kind of limited his mm-hmm. professional development.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he did very well, he became a professor, he retired a few years ago. Then the last one is Eduardo Bonilla. He's originally from Colombia. Mm-hmm. Very nice guy. He does maybe the muscle morphology and the brain morphology. He's also kind of shy, so he was never very prominent in mm-hmm. the field, even though he should, mm-hmm. because he doesn't go to meetings. Mm-hmm. And he's always working under DiMauro's umbrella. So I don't think he gets the recognition that he deserves, even though he, in a few occasions, he did some work separate. Mm-hmm. But he's a low-key guy. Mm-hmm. So they're very different people mm-hmm. that, DiMauro kind of juggles all of them mm-hmm. and keep them working together. But the advantage was that I could move through all these techniques. Mm-hmm. And really, there were no... I mean, Eric Schoen, that was my official supervisor, he would not stop me or tell me, I have to control you more mm-hmm. or something like that. I was really free to do whatever I want. And I published papers where the senior author were all four, basically. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And towards the end of my time there, I was, they would let me be the corresponding author. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of freedom. Mm-hmm. Now, how it compares with Parodi's lab? Parodi had more of a, I don't know, he was more of a role model for me because that's the way I would like to be, I think. Mm-hmm. It's not the way I am now, but that's what I would like to be. Mm-hmm. And I find remarkable that people can do that. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, he's even more famous. He became a Howard Hughes investigator in Argentina. It's not easy to do.
Wow, okay. Well, we're going to spend most of tomorrow talking about your
career.
Role here as a PI. You hear these stories about how many hours doctoral students and postdocs work. And some labs are very driven and others are not. What was this time like for
right.
you?
For me, it was very natural to bust my ass, really. Mm-hmm. I guess my main problem was to stop working, not mm-hmm. to work. I mean, Julia had to push me to stop once in a while. The environment helps a lot also. I guess New York is a good place to work a lot because usually you live close to work. It's a walk distance, so it's very easy to go in the weekends and things like that. And you have lots of foreign postdocs that are very motivated because they have a short period of time to accomplish a lot, and they're working there all the time. That's something I miss here, actually. And as you said, we're going to talk about more about it later. But I don't know if it was my motivation or the environment or a combination, but I was happy in the lab. It was really mm-hmm. like my second home. Mm-hmm. And I could stay until midnight without any problems. Mm-hmm. Of course, I wouldn't do that all the time, but mm-hmm. once in a while, mm-hmm. I would, and I'll be happy.
Well, let's back up for a minute then, because you said Julia was the one that would kind of encourage you to take some time off. First of all, how did you meet Julia?
How did I meet Julia? There was another one of my beach incursions.
Beach?
Beach.
Okay.
So I was there mm-hmm. without a car for some reason. Mm-hmm. And so I got a ride with someone back to São Paulo. And she got a ride with the same person. So we're just sitting in the back seat for 2 hours and a half talking. But that was soon before. Yeah, that was interesting. That was actually 5 years before 87. So it's like it was when I came to the United States after my bachelor's. So I just met her there. I got her phone number. But then I traveled to the United States mm-hmm. for 3 months, and I lost contact with her. So 5 years later, for some reason, was a weekend. I was in São Paulo. Didn't travel. And, you know, nothing to do. Went through my book, looking for girls. And there was that name that I always remember because I really, you know, she made a big impression on me 5 years before.
Uh-huh.
I thought she was really cute and everything and nice. So I just call her. I don't remember what I said, something stupid probably. that I found her name and I didn't know who it was. Eventually we went out, I think a few days later, the middle of the week. She was at the end of a relationship that was not working for her. And maybe I speeded up a little bit the breakup. And we started seeing each other. So
the rest, as they say, is history.
It's history, right?
But you said that she came to New York with a round-trip ticket. She was not going to stay, and ended up staying.
Well, she
wasn't sure. She wasn't sure.
Yeah. Neither was I.
Oh, okay.
Because we met 6 months before then.
Mm-hmm.
So we first moved to this, it was a sublease, this really cute place, apartment, in Washington Heights, that's close to Columbia Medical Campus.
Sort of the in place now. Yeah. Sort of the in place right. Now.
Yeah. Is it?
I don't know.
It was not the in place. But it was nice. Also,
mm-hmm.
Everything was new for us.
Mm-hmm.
It was, and we were together.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't know anyone else, except of work. So that really created a very strong bond. I can tell about this because it's interesting also. So after several months, she was in a tourist visa, and we had to do something about it, otherwise she'll have to come back. So one of the options, maybe the only, was to get married, so she could get a J2. I had a J1 visa. That was an exchange scholar.
Student. Mm-hmm.
So we did get married July 88 in the City Hall of New York without any, you know, my parents were in town by accident. They just came to visit us. We got married. That's the funny thing, because then I had already made an arrangement to go to Canada with my parents. So after getting married, we went on our honeymoon with my parents. And
that's a good story.
Yeah. So things were working out, and we got married, and
mm-hmm.
and they just, you know, they were okay. We had some rough times, maybe the first, I don't know, 2 years, then 4 years, whatever, the usual thing. But we survived all that, and now we're pretty stable now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we have a daughter, as you know.
As I know, yes. Okay. So, but I gathered this morning that Julia does some kind of physical therapy work.
Right.
So did she go back to school while you were...
Julia loves school.
She loves school.
She loves school.
Uh-huh.
So New York, she went first to Parsons School of Design because that was uh-huh. related to what she was doing
yeah.
in São Paulo. But at the same time, she also likes to exercise. So she starts exercising and teaching exercise, aerobics, personal training. She became more and more interested on that. So she went to another school that she went to Columbia Teachers College for a master's in physical education and
mm-hmm.
exercise physiology. So she did that. Meanwhile, she was doing more and more of the exercise thing. When we first moved to New York, she babysit, actually, for almost a year. So she always worked, really.
Mm-hmm.
And then she worked on a store
mm-hmm.
for a while until she started teaching more aerobic classes
mm-hmm.
and doing more personal training.
Mm-hmm.
So then when we moved here, she went to physical therapy school to
mm-hmm.
get a master's.
Mm-hmm.
University of Miami has a very good school.
Mm-hmm.
And she got in and she finished that and she started working full-time
mm-hmm.
as a physical therapist for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now when we had our daughter, Emily, she slowed down a little bit. She got it to part-time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And now she's in between jobs because mm-hmm. she was tired of the place she was mm-hmm. working.
Okay. So you ended up staying at Columbia, not only for the PhD, but for your postdoc as well.
Yeah, well, it's not a real formal postdoc, I would say, because mm-hmm. it was the same group. Mm-hmm. So I just stayed a little bit longer after my PhD.
Okay.
But you can call it a postdoc, but I was just doing more of the same.
More of the same.
Now, I don't know if you want to talk about this today, but then I made a decision of, even though I was thinking about going for a postdoc, I had this job opportunity that I decided to take. And then here.
Okay.
The main reason being that I thought that I had maybe not as much experience as I could, but I had more than a PhD experience because of my training in Argentina and in Brazil. And of course, I realized at that point that I'll have to make an effort to keep learning because otherwise maybe my training, you know, wouldn't be enough for a very good career. But I would say that the period I stayed in New York, of course, we're always doing new things, new techniques, but it's not a real formal postdoc.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me change the tape.